Did you know that the University of Central Missouri has been leading innovation for nearly 150 years? With more accreditations and more qualified faculty members, our commitment to academic success is unparalleled. And we make sure every student receives the support they need to graduate on time and with less debt. So whatever opportunity you're looking for, make your impact sooner at UCM, with campuses located in Warrensburg, Lee Summit, and online. Find out more about UCM and the power of opportunity in action at ucmo.edu.
This is Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with modern language professor Christy Boney. We talk about the modern language program, her experiences studying abroad, and her interest in German literature. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Voices of UCM. I'm your host, Andrew Zellner, and today I'm sitting down with professor of German studies, Christy Boney. How are you doing today, Christy?
Doing great, thanks.
That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has it been a How's the end of the semester treating you so far?
I think semesters are always hard for professors.
Yeah,
and students too, right? Because it's all about projects and tests and everything that has to get done.
Yeah.
And then there's always all the extra things. Mm-hmm. So it's a crazy time, but it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's very nice outside. So that's always good. Yesterday was kind of a whole mess with all the wind and stuff.
Kind of a mess, but isn't that Missouri?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It's like that transition. We're in that transitionary period where it's all just kind of crazy. Where it's 60 in the morning and 80 in the afternoon. What are you gonna do? So, what drew you to the German language in particular?
That's a good question. I usually say that it was high school. I had a really good high school teacher.
Okay.
But I took German in high school because my mom wanted me to take Spanish.
Okay.
And so it was a moment of rebellion and in high school. And it was just really good. And then actually I was an English major in college.
Oh, yeah.
But because I had some language skills or good language, I got some credits. And then it was easy to get a German major. And then that's where the opportunities just kind of fell.
Okay.
And so like I got a Fulbright and then I got a
scholarship
to go to Ohio State. And so that's just kind of how that happened.
It just all kind of lined up after that.
It did. Mm-hmm. Like language just kind of opened the door for me.
Yeah.
That's very cliche, but it's true.
Uh-huh. I mean, like it makes sense being able to speak in an entirely different language probably just opens up a lot more opportunities just based on that you can talk to more people.
It's true. I mean, people ask me like, do you have German heritage? And the answer is no, none. But we're in Missouri where there is actually a lot of German heritage. So it's
really
a fair question. You know, it's just no, not me.
Yeah. I mean, that's an entirely fair question. Yeah. Because when you hear someone, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a German teacher. I was like, oh, are you from there? I was like,
no.
I just like the language.
Right. That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. I had some really good professors and then there was just like these moments of like, I think this is what I want to do.
Okay.
Like, this is it.
And then you wanted to, so initially you were in the English major?
Yeah. I mean, I'm an English and German major. So
you're both. Okay.
I thought I was going to be an English PhD, but that's just not how how the dominoes fell.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So was that for like teaching or was that for something else?
I don't think as an undergrad, so back in the 90s, it wasn't so like important necessarily. Like you could take time to figure out what you wanted to do.
You didn't have to specify.
Right. Well, you know, that's fine. I'm safe. I'm okay with my age. But
I meant when I said you didn't have to specify your major at the time.
Oh,
that's
I see.
I
right.
Sorry.
You didn't have to specify. And then so you didn't really I didn't know what I was going to do with it. I just knew that's what I wanted to do because it wasn't this get in, get out and get a job. Now, I think my parents would have a different story. But for me, it was more of this is what was interesting.
Okay.
And so that's why I followed it.
Okay. Yeah. So what did you do initially like outside of college? Did you come here like directly or was there
In
between period?
After Ohio State, well, I went to Germany for a year. I lived in a town called Münster in the West. And then that's where I taught in high school. That was the Fulbright.
Okay.
And then I went to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And that was a long time. It's a long time to get your master's and PhD.
I imagine, yeah.
Right? Lived in Berlin for a year. And then my first gig was really University of Kentucky.
Okay.
So I worked there for a few years before I got the offer here. And very excited. I didn't know how Missouri was going to fit. I didn't know Kansas City was going to fit. But it's been really spectacular.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
It's always nice when you kind of gamble on something and then it all kind of works out.
It all kind of works out. I mean, it's a great scene in Kansas City. I like going to concerts. I like the museums. It's just a lot of great food, a lot of great stuff around.
It's like a it's kind of a big city, but it's also kind of not. You still kind of get that kind of local feel.
While it's going to change there now, right? With all the Chiefs and
stuff? Yeah. It's probably going to start changing lot over the next
see what happens.
Few years. Who knows? Anything could happen. So right. It's really, really kind of up there. So for like specifically like the program overall, it says like on the website, it's like interdisciplinary. What exactly does that mean?
It's a good question. Well, one, we've just been, since we're a new department now with modern languages and interdisciplinary studies that houses gender and sexuality studies, as well as Africana studies. So we work really hard to find synergy between those three programs. But also a lot of our students do take courses with political science or international studies or international business. And I'm just naming those, but we find over and over again that the student who does, you know, the major maybe that they think they're going to do the job for, whether criminal justice, psychology or whatever, and then pair it with a language and really apply it that way, they end up doing better later for the value of the job they find, the salary cap, all those things that really matter at the end of the degree, right? And so, but a lot of our courses, we've worked really hard to not just teach. So a lot of people think when you take language, you're going to learn how to like get the restaurant, like go in a restaurant, I'm going to order a beer, and that's what I'm going to do in the language.
Right. Yeah.
And that's there. That's a unit.
I mean, that's obviously an important part of it. Cause if you're living in another country, you need to know how to order food.
Obviously. But we also do literature and film and history. And so, there are classes that we offer where I'll teach in conjunction with history, and we'll teach a class on the Weimar Republic, which is the rise of Nazism.
Okay.
Or the fall of the wall. Or we'll do something with women's studies. So I should say gender and sexuality studies. It's a new name. It's still giving me time.
Yeah. That's tough sometimes when they change the names and stuff. It's like,
it's a bigger name.
It's a different thing. Yep. Okay. Well, that's really neat how, cause I was wondering about that, like in general, because like when you think of it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to get a degree in language or whatever it is, it's like, oh well, what is the application for that in the real world? But you know, when if you're combining it with several different things, then it makes a lot more sense.
It is a visibility issue that we struggle with. It's very easy, like, I'm going to get a degree in nursing, you know what you're going to do,
right?
But when you tell your parents, I'm going to get a degree in German, they're like, well, what are you going to do with that?
Well, yeah, the classic parent question. It's like, well, what are you going to do with that?
What are you going to do with that? And the truth is you can do a lot with it.
Yeah. I imagine just, like I said, having that second or third language option probably opens up a lot of doors in terms of variety of locations you can settle in, variety of jobs that you can get.
And also, I would say language, we talk about how it's not just learning the language. You're also learning how to deal with other cultures. You're learning critical thought. You're learning a lot of these sort of soft skills that are really important in the future.
Okay.
You
know? Yeah.
And so that's why I think also we really sort of say this is really something you should do.
Mm-hmm. Just having this as a, like a secondary, like you said, like a minor or something like that.
Sure. We do get a lot of minors and that's, we would love to have them.
I'm sure. So you were kind of talking about that, but like in like the modern language program, you teach like soft skills and stuff as well, along with like the language stuff.
Sure. It's never just sort of, this is a vocabulary list, right? It's how do we apply that? Like one of my favorite games, and when I'm trying to teach vocabulary, is I just give them a bunch of words and they have to define it with the language that they know.
Oh, okay.
And that's really tough, but that, you know, activates a different part of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you do talk about history and literature, you have to obviously use critical thought to understand it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That makes sense. Being able to, you have to have those like those critical thinking skills in general, honestly.
Right.
I agree. It's good that that's being emphasized. Mm-hmm. So, you also teach gender and women, or I guess
gender and sexuality.
Gender and sexuality studies. That's what it's called. Now I have it listed on here as gender and women's studies or something. But
was just a new name change.
Right. Okay.
And so, actually, really excited. It's going to be a new major this fall.
Oh, okay. So this is like,
it's huge.
Brand
huge deal.
Brand new. Yeah.
I'm a affiliated faculty.
Okay.
So I'll teach a couple courses. One of my favorite is when I get to do gender in comics.
Oh, okay.
That's something that I kind of developed a while back, and I start with the beginning and then, you know, start with Superman and then we go through romance comics and then kind of go through the end. And I do love teaching it, but, Dr. Rondeau is in charge of gender sexuality studies. So she's the one that, you know, decides all the courses.
Right. Yeah.
And when I get a chance, I do it.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting course, gender and comics.
Yes. I do love teaching gender and comics. Comics is, I do German studies because you have to, right?
Right, yeah.
But for about 20, 25 years, I don't know, we won't put an age limit on it, I have been a comics aficionado. And so back when San Diego Comic Con, I don't know if you know.
Oh, right, yeah.
Was before, like, was not gaming and all the big blockbuster movies. It was about comics,
yeah.
And so we would have an academic conference there.
Oh, okay.
And that's so we would go there really a lot and do things. But it's something I hope to get back to now that, you know, I've kind of put my time in German studies. I really want to get back to the sort of comic side of the love that I have for it.
Right, yeah. And is that specifically, like, on the, like, Western comics, like American and German?
Right.
Or is it more worldwide?
No, I'm more of a... If you come to my office, you'll see nothing but Wonder Woman.
Okay, that's fair.
But my newest project, the one that I'm working on, is tracing, and I'm working on it with actually my husband, who is taught me everything I know about comics. He was also an English major. Now he's a writer, so I need to kind of give a shout out to that.
Yeah,
We're working on a project together tracing American modernism. So basically, the traces of Superman. But we start with Gatsby, we start with John Smith, we start with Benjamin Franklin. And then we kind of move up to where he is. So it's not just, you know, most people say Superman is 19, you know, there's these two guys on the streets, you know, and then they created Superman and there's these two Jewish kids. But it's actually, you know, we find the roots of that sooner.
Right, yeah.
And so that's what we are hoping to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Well, at least in terms of, like, Superman, at least, I feel like the inspirations go back even further than,
definitely.
Like, obviously even further than just, like, the two kids.
That, definitely, right?
That made him. But I mean, like, thinking about, like, ancient myth and stuff.
Right,
there's a lot of
there.
Similarities in that compared to Superman. So it's interesting to see all those links kind of link up to modern culture and be like, oh, this is kind of exactly what's been being done for the past hundreds of years.
That's very smart. Right. Obviously, Hercules and all those, yeah. They're all there. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a very interesting thing to be looking at, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's sort of the side project, you know, when you have time to research.
Right, yeah, obviously. Finding time for the research and stuff whenever you're like a professor and then doing classes and grading and everything else that comes with it. It's just, I imagine that's a lot.
It is. We got lucky. A couple years ago, I was an honors fellow and I got to teach the course.
Okay.
I had some really good students who were really into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they humored me. and going through the material.
Yeah.
So it's something I would love to get back to, obviously. Yeah. But no, the class for gender and sexuality studies really just focus on the gender and sort of the development of gender
within
comics.
Right, yeah.
So we do a lot of the class, I would say a lot of the canon, rather than, I mean, it's really exploded the comic scene over the past 10 years.
Definitely, yeah.
But we kind of stick to the canon and kind of get ourselves up to, we do some modern, very, very modern, very, very contemporary stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I really want to kind of stick to, like, if you were to read any comics, these are the ones you need to know.
Mm-hmm. These are the
right.
The important ones that
That's
you need
right.
to be paying attention to.
That's right.
For the sake of this class.
That's
and
right.
in general. We'll be right back with more Voices of UCM. Brought to you by Rise Community Services.
That's the sound of a door slamming in your face. That's the sound heard by many individuals living with a disability. But it doesn't have to be. Rise Community Services is committed to opening doors, not closing them. We believe that each person deserves a life that is full of hope and empowered by self-choice. If you or a loved one need help, please visit watchusrise.org.
A degree in digital media production with an emphasis in digital journalism will develop your skill set for work in multimedia outlets, including print, online, and broadcast. Our faculty members bring real-world experience to the classroom, and students can showcase their work online at digitalberg.com and in the student-led newspaper, The Mule Skinner. For more information on this or other concentrations within the digital media production program, please visit ucmo.edu/DMP.
Welcome back to Voices of UCM, brought to you by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with Modern Languages Professor Christy Boney. We continued our discussion by talking about her experiences studying abroad. Are you involved with, like, the study abroad program?
I am. I would say modern languages in general, we lead more study tours than most.
Right, yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you're taking a language, we want you to go abroad.
Right.
Whether for a summer or a semester. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of short-term study tours because we find that students have trouble getting away for a semester for whatever reason, whether they need to work or they're just nervous or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we have one coming up in going to Leon in Spain. That's not me, but those are two of my colleagues this summer. But then go for 2 weeks or 4 weeks.
Okay.
But I have taken students to Berlin and Munich and Vienna and Prague. And then last spring break with Dr. Goldstein in history, we went to Auschwitz, which, you know, I say some students go to Florida for spring break, but these students chose to like do something really meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was
really educate themselves about
it was great.
Unfortunate event.
Yeah. I really liked it in that we started in Berlin and kind of did a historical buildup.
Oh,
and then we
went
to Warsaw where there was the ghettos, and then we ended in Krakow and there, and then we came back.
Mm-hmm.
It was very impactful. I mean, that was inspired by, in 2018, there was a shooting in Pittsburgh.
Right.
It was very anti-Semitic time. And so then we put together a panel, and we just noticed that there was a lot of, I was surprised at some of the denial that I heard. And so I said, well, maybe it's time to do something about it.
To do something.
And students
get out there.
Wanted to go. So here we are.
Yeah. It's very important to not deny or forget these things happened, because they are such tragic events that they shouldn't be repeated.
Well, not just that. I mean, I think there are lessons to learn.
And there
are
also, there are,
for
there
the
are
future and
things
now.
To learn there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Learning how to identify those things for when they might happen again.
Absolutely.
It's very important to ensure that nothing like the Holocaust can happen again.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a point. So when I teach Holocaust Lit and Film, I'm always very careful to note that we're not doing it to desensitize ourselves or to
sure
that we look at the horror and go, oh, I'm so glad that that didn't happen to me, because that's not how we should approach it.
No. Yeah.
And so while I can't say I enjoy teaching the class. It's a hard semester whenever I teach the class.
I imagine it is, because it's a very hard topic to discuss.
But it's always a meaningful class.
Right. It's an important thing to be aware of.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. So for when you're like planning those study abroad trips, how does that usually go? Do you plan that like with several different people? Like what goes into that?
It usually starts with a student saying, wouldn't this be cool?
Okay.
And then I think, yeah, I want to go there. That'd be cool. So one of my favorites has been, we were talking about Christmas markets. Germany does them really well. And a student said, I would love to go. And I was like, you know what? Let's do it. And so we created a tour, and we did like Nuremberg. There was a lot of historical stuff, but we went visited at least 19, I think, Christmas markets by the end. It was a lot. It was amazing, though.
I'm sure.
And so, but I usually plan it myself. I do that because if I use a middleman or a group, it costs the students more.
Okay.
And if I do it myself, then it's a lot cheaper.
Right, yeah. Then you can just kind of get all the...
Right. And in today, it's
the cheaper options.
Pretty easy. I mean, it is still a lot of work. I'm not going to downplay anybody.
No, definitely, yeah.
It's a lot of work to plan it, but I don't mind it, and... It lets me be a bit of a control freak. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I enjoy it very much.
Okay. Well, that's good at least. So you're not like struggling to get through. It's like, oh, I have to plan the next travel abroad thing.
No, I mean, I am taking a break because after we had to take a break for COVID.
Uh-huh.
And then after COVID, it just kind of hit. So we did one to Vienna and Prague, and that was kind of a makeup from COVID. We had the stuff. And then we did, I was part of the Divided Cities. We went to Berlin and Jerusalem.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which was really incredible. It kind of looked at the divisions. First we went to Kansas City and looked at the racial divisions in our home. And then we went to Jerusalem, political divisions, obviously.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then we went to Germany and saw, like, also a version of political
Getting
divisions.
That worldwide perspective of these things. That's really cool.
It was a really incredible trip. And then I did the Auschwitz. And so now I need a little bit of a break. But
we
do have some coming up. So we have the one in Lyon, and then my colleagues are going to put one for Berlin and Weimar. So I think that'll be amazing.
Right, yeah, That's really cool. Yeah. I imagine having a break after, like, because it sounds like those were like back to back to back.
It felt a little back to back to back.
Or pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, my kids were like, what are you doing? Why are you
why aren't you here anymore?
Right. Aren't you supposed to be my parent? No, I'm going to go to Europe. No, it's not like that.
Right, yeah. But like, yeah, I imagine like three trips like that, probably a month each?
They're all about 2 weeks.
Still, you're traveling that often. It's just it can be a lot.
It can be a lot. And there's a lot of planning involved, but
it's
all really worth it. So because a lot of students that go have never left Missouri.
Oh, right. Then.
And then so just hearing that and letting them see that is just one of the most gratifying things I think there is.
Right. Just getting, because I mean, like for someone who hasn't even left the state, I imagine it's a completely new environment for
them.
It's
bonkers. You're like, it's okay not to eat Taco Bell.
You can try some different kind of foods.
You can try some different things. No, I'm teasing them.
Yeah, I remember that. It didn't quite happen to me a similar way. This wasn't even a abroad trip. This was like this was years and years ago at this point. It was about probably about 10 years ago, actually, now. But since my dad was in the Air Force, we moved around regularly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then we eventually ended up in Okinawa, Japan for a little bit, which was a completely crazy experience for me as like a 9-10 year old, because it was completely separate. It was like, wow. Because I mean, like, we were still on like a military base, and there's like a couple military bases on the little island.
Sure.
Because it is Okinawa off the mainland, so but it was like a complete like that culture shock feeling, because even though I had moved around a couple times in the U.S., I'd
but that's
in, like,
completely different.
It's
culture.
Completely different, yeah. Because, and even like on Okinawa, it's different from the mainland of Japan.
And
so.
You still have pretty good memories of that, even
yeah. No, it was definitely a very important. We were there for like a year and a half, so. There's definitely some defined childhood memories there, I feel.
That's
like.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It was. I feel like it definitely opened up my vision to be like, wow, this is how some of the rest of the world is. And it was kind of nice because there's still like some of that American culture, because we lived on base, like on the Air Force base. So there's like still like some of that there. You could still go to like a McDonald's if you really wanted
if you really
to. But like I could still go off and then have all these different experiences, and it was great.
That's pretty envious.
It was very, very eye-opening to how the different parts of the world work.
And that's exactly what I say, like, to students.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so transformative to go abroad. I mean, that is a bit more of extreme, right?
It's a little bit more extreme.
You know, it's still one of those things that it kind of changes you. And I would say that going abroad for myself is also, like, one of the reasons I'm here. I wouldn't say there isn't a single professor in our language program that didn't say that going abroad sort of changed them that way.
Right.
It's the transformative experience.
It definitely is in general, because it gives you that completely different perspective on things.
Right. You sort of understand what being American a little bit is about.
And then you can understand, like, oh, this is why some people see us this way or something like that.
That's true. The first thing I tell my students when we go abroad, don't embarrass me, right?
Don't do that loud stupid
American, right?
don't be the stereotypical American,
right? Don't do it, because I won't know.
Yeah,
I will bring them home,
and I will be upset at you.
That's right.
So, what do you think like a student can do with like a modern language degree?
Right. So, I mean, we kind of touched on that.
We touched on that a little bit.
I would just say part of some of our alums, maybe that's the best way to do it. I think we've had alums work for Cerner in their Latin division, or just in their IT department. And then sometimes the recent alum said that they sometimes work with the German partners.
Okay.
So we've had Cerner, we've had criminal justice. I had one student that said, I will never use German on the streets. He's a detective for Kansas City. Mm. I'll never use German on the streets, but I got a pay raise just by having that.
I mean, like,
degree.
A pay raise is a pay raise.
It's a pay raise. But we've had students go abroad and get jobs in Germany. I've had students go to Japan and Korea and never come back, decide that, like, I love it there. I'm going to teach English here and never come back. We've had, let me think of other alums. Well, we are in need of teachers, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
And so right now we have 100-some positions in the Missouri looking for foreign language teachers.
Wow, just Missouri alone.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Every week we get a call, and our language teachers here usually get hired before they even finish student teaching.
Oh, really?
And that's pretty good. So definitely teaching is always an option.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, if you think you're good that way, I think that's definitely worthwhile with the challenges facing teaching. But really I would say anything that you want to do, it's a nice sort of extra thing. I'm not going to ever say you can't be a translator, but that's not really what you do when you get a language degree. You don't be a translator.
It's just like, it's something that's like there as an option if you need it.
If you need it, right.
I feel like, you mentioned so many other options there that alongside with a language that you can do something.
Right, because we're a global world, so there's always like need for global understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if it is like, I think it was especially interesting you mentioned IT, because I didn't even think about that as like an option. Like there might be IT for, you might get a call from someone who may not
understand it well, or just it's a cultural issue, or just.
And
just,
so, if you can speak in their language, then that would solve the issue.
Right, and so that would be, you know, I would say anything you want, you could do it. We do have a certificate that we find popular. For nurses to take Spanish, because it does seem to be something that they need in the medical field.
Uh-huh.
It's really meant for people who aren't necessarily here, but a lot of our students here take it to go along with it.
Right.
Just kind of like Spanish for healthcare. And so it gives you like an extra set of vocabulary.
Right. Yeah. Just giving that extra set is, I mean, like I said, huge in,
right.
in being able to communicate.
Right. Because once we're finding now that nurses want to come back and get it. And it's once COVID hit, they weren't able to do it, but now it's easing
right,
up.
Yeah.
And they're like, I think I need this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just because, I mean, like COVID was just complete shutdown of everything. So.
Right.
Completely shut everything down for like a year and a half. So.
Right, and our nurses were already overworked as it was.
Right, yeah, because it's the middle of COVID, so they don't.
Exactly.
They're not going to have the time to come out and get a language degree.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think in general for like teaching and stuff, I've heard like teaching is just down in general, and not even just in modern languages,
just
everything. And it's really unfortunate.
I don't think it's an easy time in the high schools and elementary schools.
It's not, because I mean, right after COVID, everyone's either like students coming into high school who had like all online middle school is
right.
like you're dealing with a completely different beast there.
It's true, and you're seeing it now as they come to college,
right?
Like there is. Something that just, I don't know if it's like a social thing or what, but you're just, your life was completely different when you're isolated.
It is.
And so I think it's going to take many years to kind of turn that back around.
Yeah, it definitely is, because I mean, like I remember during COVID, I was pretty much, thankfully we have computers so I could like talk to my friends online and stuff. But
right.
if I didn't have that resource, like I just wouldn't have talked to anyone other than like my family for like a
right.
year and a half.
Who wants to do that, right?
I mean, like, you need different people in your life.
You need different people
to talk
in your
to.
Life.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you don't, it's going to be like, I don't know what I'm doing here. It's just, I'm talking to the same people over and over again.
Exactly. And, you know, we did feel that, obviously, in our language classes, because it's very hard. Not that you can't take classes online.
Right,
but there's so much that is, I think, sometimes lost when you're not in a class and doing the group work and doing the games and
right.
building the community, right?
Because it's, like it's very, I imagine it's very interaction based.
We do a lot of interaction.
So I imagine doing that online is a lot harder.
It is.
I mean, like
harder.
You could do it over like a Zoom or something like that, but
it's not the same.
It's still not the same thing as being in the room physically.
Yeah, one of my greatest joys is seeing students who like start together and say German one, and then just kind of create the community and like continue on and know each other by the end. Like I love that that they kind of get to know each other because we are more friendly, right?
Right.
It isn't like a lecture class. You have to get to know people.
You have to know the people. Yeah,
that's right.
Oh, I feel like that would be better for learning in general, because not only are you going to learn the class, you're going there because you enjoy the people. So I would imagine that it probably increases learning in some way.
And I would say that's a lot of UCM, right? I mean,
we
do have a lot of sort of one-on-one or small class sizes.
I've definitely noticed that. There's only been like a couple big classes that I've had, and they're like the general stuff pretty
right.
much. It's like the introductory courses to like math, science, I'm in like a film appreciation class that has a bunch of people in it, but like those are very lecture based. But then when you get into like the actual like nitty gritty of the major, it's very like
you get
it's
to know
like,
the people.
It's like 12 to 15 people in a class, and it's like, oh yeah, you get to know people.
I think that's one of the bonuses of a small school like UCM.
It definitely
I love
is.
That idea. Yeah,
because like I said, you get that community
right.
feel. It. I find it helps me at the very least, so I hope it helps other people.
Oh, Andrew, you're a gem.
I try my best. Stay tuned for more after this break. Voices of UCM is sponsored by Rise Community Services.
Every minute, there are 6 children born in the U.S., and one of them will be born with a developmental disability. Rise Community Services believes that an individual's potential doesn't vanish simply because they were born with a unique set of challenges. We believe that each person deserves a life full of hope and empowered by self-choice. If you or a loved one need help, please visit watchusrise.org.
A degree in digital media production with an emphasis in digital cinema will prepare you for all aspects of film production, such as screenwriting, editing, cinematography, and motion graphics. Our faculty members bring real-world experience to the classroom, and students can showcase their work in film festivals, UCM's CTV, and DigitalBerg.com. For more information on this or other concentrations within the Digital Media Production Program, please visit ucmo.edu/DMP.
You're listening to Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with Modern Languages Professor Christy Boney. We finish our discussion by talking about her interest in German literature. you also like have like that emphasis in German literature in particular.
Yeah. So my dissertation focuses, it's actually in English and German. I do okay. like Joseph Conrad and Anna Zeger. She's a writer. She was an exile.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And during the, she was Jewish, so she had to leave in exile.
Mm-hmm.
And she lived in Mexico for a while. And then she came back. She decided that she needed to go to the East and not the West, because the East had this potential not to do the same fascist problems.
Right.
And so she went to the East. Whether that, you know, that project is didn't really succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But so she's a writer that I really liked. And then because she went to the East, the West sort of put her, blacklisted her.
Hmm.
And so she wasn't really discovered again or made, I wouldn't say, or made aware or realized, because I would say she's actually one of the best sort of writers, German writers of the 20th century.
Uh-huh.
And I know I'm biased, but I really think that.
Mm-hmm.
But because she went to the West, we didn't, not until like the late 90s did she really sort of get the resurgence and is finally getting her credit.
Right.
So that is kind of one piece. I work a lot with Anna Zegers. When she came over, her book was the first in the New York papers to be put into comic book form.
Mm.
And so I got to do a project on that.
Okay.
And my dissertation advisor, who is one of the well-known Zeger scholars, recently passed away last May.
Oh, that's unfortunate. It is.
She was amazing. Mm-hmm. Such an amazing woman. But now I and another friend are tasked to kind of continue the project.
Uh-huh.
So that is one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a big fan of Franz Kafka. He's the absurdist.
Oh, right, Kafka.
You like Kafka? There are people that either like him or they really hate him.
I'm aware of Kafka. I haven't delved into Kafka
yet.
I'm aware of Kafka.
I like using Kafka through visual art, and I'm not an art person, so I've had to learn a lot of art stuff, and art terms. But I use there's an artist called Paul Klee, and I think you can understand Kafka a lot. Or I don't really sort of say like, this is how you understand. I just kind of talk about how they are both visual artists.
Right.
And so that is another sort of avenue that I've kind of found myself going and looking at the visual nature of texts.
Right. Yeah.
And then the comics. Mm-hmm. So I have like three areas that I really like delving into, and it's just kind of what I'm working on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, I like that idea of like the visual storytelling. I think that's really neat.
It's how I once, I think I have to give my husband credit again too as an English teacher, but I got the idea from him. So whenever I do a literature piece, we usually look at art of the time and like pretend we're in a museum and kind of dissect it that way. And then once we understand the art, so like in the 20th century, it gets kind of wacky, right? But everything's going on. And so once you can understand the perspective of the art, then you can kind of understand that in literature.
Okay.
And so that's one of my favorite things to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if students like it, but I make them do it anyway.
So it doesn't really matter if they like it or not.
I'm like, look at this piece. What do you think? Mm. No, I think in general, students usually give good feedback. Otherwise, we continue to do it.
Well, I feel like the movements of art are probably tied in some sort of way to the movements of literature.
I think so in
some way, because I feel like it's just because they're both art forms from the same time frame, they're probably going to have similar feel, similar aesthetics.
Right. And we are a visual generation. Students are more visual, right? They are more apt to watch a video than they are to just, you know, listen to something.
Or read it.
Mm-hmm. So it helps with that.
Mm-hmm. To being able to visualize something that maybe in a text, like if you can visualize it, that may unlock a whole different form of understanding because a lot of people are visual learners, and it also provides like a different way to view things.
Right. I actually also don't have a problem with students doing audiobooks instead, right? I mean, because we come from an oral tradition, right? That's how we first started, and then we went to print, and now we're sort of moving back to this idea of listening. Like students are more apt to listen to the book rather than read it.
Uh-huh.
And as long as it's, you know, digested, to me, it's all good.
Well, yeah, because I mean, like an audiobook, I mean, the experience is different because you're not physically reading it.
That's true.
You're still getting the same content.
That's how it used to be done. So I think it is an interesting sort of trend how we're seeing.
It is, yeah, because it kind of went up and then it kind of went down again. Mm-hmm. And now it's interesting just seeing trends like that go through. And when it comes to art forms like that, like we consume it this way and then we go try something else and then we come back and then we go back to the other thing. It's like, I wonder what exactly is inspiring that.
I don't know. I mean, I do see, and I don't know if this is a COVID thing, and we're talking about COVID, but I do find that you mentioned film appreciation. I do find that I would say in the past 5 years, the patience for films has lessened, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, patience for in general has lessened. Patience in general has I would say just attention spans in general have just gone down.
It's true. So like but, doing a long film, there used to be like mm-hmm. a woohoo, and now it's more like, can't we just watch videos?
Yeah, that's I've noticed that even in myself sometimes. It's like for like the really long, but this is like this only really affects me when it's like a 3 hour or like a 2.5 to 3 hour long movie. Then uh-huh. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of like
can't do it.
It's hard. I just have a hard time finding the time to sit down and watch something like that. Uh-huh. But I mean like when I actually start doing it, I'm pretty much there. But like just getting to that point.
No, I get it.
It's hard sometimes.
Like, I will admit that it took me 2 days to finish Oppenheimer.
I mean, like,
it was a great film.
It's a long film, though.
But sitting down for 3, I didn't have it. So I was like, all right, it's gonna be a 2-day thing.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, it's just, I don't know, attention spans have gone down.
It's true. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I find that then if we can do these shorter bursts and sort of understand mm-hmm. then it, we have more chance of success.
Right, yeah. Just because I feel like when you're doing, especially like when you're teaching and giving information, doing it in like slightly segmented shorter bursts,
yes,
that helps me at least digest it all, because like we have like a short video and then you discuss it for a couple minutes or something like that. I find that completely like revamps like how I'm like, wow, this makes a lot more sense to where if you just like throw it all at and then we have a discussion or something
it's
like
true.
That. I imagine it helps a lot.
Pre-COVID, I could do my online videos for my lectures.
Right, yeah.
They could be 20 minutes long, mm-hmm. but they can't anymore. They've got to be like short little like this, 5 to 8 minutes, mm-hmm. and then we have to stop. You're right. You're very much right.
It's just, I wonder if that's a symptom of like the less attention span, or if that's just a better way of how to convey information.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to blame COVID. I mean, I think it's a lot. We have a lot of information.
There's just a lot of stuff happening. Yeah.
Right. And so it's hard just to stay focused. I think mm-hmm. so. So, I mean, I'm going to put it on a lot of things. Yeah.
Yeah. I think COVID definitely plays a part, but then again, there's still a ton of stuff like our phones. There's always a ton of stuff on there. So it's hard to get away from that sometimes.
It is. Very good.
Yeah. So I believe your other research interest other than comics was comparative modernism. Or modernism?
Right, and that's what I kind of was going with the Kafka and Clay. That is kind of, so they are modernists, and then I kind of compare the visual with the thing. So one of my minors was comparative lit.
Okay.
And that's when we say, I think one of my thesis projects in undergrad, it's been a long time, but we looked at Phaedra. She's this Greek figure, but all these sort of versions of Phaedra throughout mm-hmm. time. And so the idea of then I'm kind of comparing various things that way.
Okay.
And so I think it's just sort of how you're trained.
Okay.
And that's, I can't seem to do a project unless I'm comparing something.
Okay.
That seems to be where I'm at in my life. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, comparison is an important thing when looking at a text, comparing it to pieces at the other pieces at the time, other pieces from before time that may have inspired it. I imagine that's pretty important for analysis.
And just to understand it in general. So one mm-hmm. of the things I'm working on now, this writer, Anna Zegar, she wrote a book. It's a concentration camp. He escaped, and mm-hmm. 7 people escaped. And it's sort of one of the first at the time that came out.
Okay.
And actually, she wrote it and right as she was leaving, and she had heard sort of reports. And after that, it sort of inspired a lot of those like Nazi films.
Right.
But so she wrote it, and then there's a composer. His name is Henze, and he in the 50s wrote this piece about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not familiar with the piece, so I want to like, now I've got to learn music ideas, and I don't know other than, I like that song.
Mm.
Right? Ooh, that's got a good beat. Mm. So I got to learn some music stuff so I can understand that, and then maybe that gives us a way into understanding this text a little bit better.
Right.
Or vice versa, because it's also a political and historical moment that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I mean by comparative. Like, that's where this lands I take.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm, well, yeah, like I said, that's an important part of analyzing any piece of art, whether it be literature, a piece, a movie,
right.
You need to have context behind the creation of it.
Right.
And like what potentially led to it, what potentially was inspired by it.
Right.
It's like, you got to consider all these things when looking at.
Right. So now I think I'm like going to have to take an intro to music.
Yeah.
Class. I'm sure they have those. Music appreciation class.
Like, there's probably something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can learn some terms because mm-hmm. I won't know what I'm
talking
about.
You might just be able to like look up all the terms.
I mean, a phone. There you go.
That's true. You can look it up on there. That's one of the crazy things about our modern age, that we can just kind of have all the information.
That's true.
Ever pretty much in our phones. And that's just kind of crazy. Yeah. So what are some other like hobbies and interests that you might have?
Well, I have two boys. Uh-huh. And so at the moment in my life, I'm doing a lot of like sport games or marching band competitions. But when I don't, and I love doing that. There's a part of me I didn't know I would enjoy sitting on a bench screaming at a coach. Right? I didn't know that I would love that part of my life. I do like to go to a lot of concerts in KC. That for some reason, Kansas City is just in a great place to get a lot of the small acts.
Yeah,
like I'm not really
is.
A T-Mobile person.
Uh-huh.
Or the big, is T-Mobile Center? Is that what it's called?
I think it's what it's called.
Yeah, one of those.
Like the mega stadiums.
Right. I don't do those. I do like, so, you know, I didn't get to go to Swift. But, you know, but I do a lot of the smaller things. So we do enjoy that very much. And then I, since COVID, I've made it a point to get back to reading. And that's really weird to say as a humanities professor.
Yeah.
But somewhere you lose the love of books when you start teaching. So I made a point to get back to like what I love to do. And it usually has nothing to do with German studies. Right. Like right now I'm into a lot of fairy stuff and demon science fiction stuff. And that's not at all.
Not really related.
Academic.
I mean, like.
I've learned to love books.
Mm-hmm.
I do smart stuff too. I guess I should say that on the radio. I do smart stuff too.
Well, I mean, like having that wide palette is important again for just understanding art in general. Having that wide palette of genre of, I don't know if intelligence is the right word, but just having that wide variety is an important part of a media palette, I guess.
Right. I mean, I'm a baker, but I'm terrible. So I like baking, but I'm terrible at it. So I wouldn't say that's a hobby. Right. There are things that I do that I'm not good at, but I enjoy doing.
I mean, like, then that's all that really. I mean, like, you don't have to be good at something to enjoy it. So
that's true. But the amount of things I've made my family eat that aren't very good is pretty laughable, and yet I continue to do it.
I mean, if you're probably, I hope you're improving, right?
Sure, a little bit. Yeah, I can make some good bread.
that's good then. We can make good bread.
Yeah. So that's about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool.
That'll be
the show, yeah.
Yeah, this was awesome.
I'm glad you had a good time.
This has been Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Be sure to tune in next week at 7 p.m. on both Wednesday and Saturday. You can listen to the show at ucmbeat.com on either the live feed or at any time by going to the Shows tab and finding the Voices of UCM tab. Once again, I'm your host, Andrew Zellner, and we'll talk next time on Voices of UCM.